Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair make their returns. Brock Lesnar destroys Dominic and Rey Mysterio. Your full Raw review starts right after this. All right, so we're going to get right back to the WWE podcast in a second, but I just want to talk quickly about a product I recently came across, and it's called Mirex, M-I-R-R-E-X. So for you guys out there, you may want to direct your female counterpart to this website. It's pretty cool. It's a makeup mirror, but it's much more than that. The company is based in Colorado, and just so you guys know, Mirex stands for the Innovative Mirror. They're here to improve the lifestyle of individuals, and they want to take a step into the future, and that they have. They have taken the makeup mirror and turned it into a smart makeup mirror. So what's this going to do? It's going to change the way the mirrors are used. There are three levels of LED light for those last-minute face checks, and you can even charge your phone wirelessly. It also has an attachment to take that really cool, well-lighted selfie. So you guys really got to check this out. This is really, I've never seen anything like this. It's Mirex.store, M-I-R-R-E-X.store. That's M-I-R-R-E-X.store. This is definitely one of the coolest things that I've seen, and it would make a great gift. So check out Mirex.store today.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast on this very first day of October 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. It is October, and when the calendar flips to October, you think of a couple of things. Football. You think of fall. You think of cooler weather. And in this case, you think of, oh my God, how much wrestling do we have this week? Think about this, folks. We have, five events? I may be underdoing it here. We had Monday Night Raw last night, which this is what we'll get to. We have SmackDown on Friday. We have NXT and the debut of Dynamite with AEW on Wednesday. We have Hell in a Cell on Sunday. So that is, if you like wrestling and this week isn't enough for you, I don't know what to tell you. This is one of the biggest weeks in professional wrestling history, hands down. There's just so much content this week, and we're going to do our best here at the WWE Podcast to keep you guys updated, informed, and fed with your analysis of wrestling craving. So we're going to get that going. I will tell you the NXT podcast is returning next week. So a bit of a delay, but we're back on track, back in the saddle next week with the NXT podcast. But the AEW podcast makes its debut Thursday with Zach Perez, and he will be discussing the very first episode of the show, which is going to be noteworthy to say the least. And I'm very excited to have him as part of the team. So if you want to get a taste of what the AEW product is about or hear his analysis, you'll be able to do that on Thursday when the episode is released. And on that same day, I also still do my review show of the entire week with my co-host. So it's going to be a double dose of this show and the NXT show. Or the AEW, I'm going to get that mixed up, the AEW show on Thursday. So a lot to cover. It's going to get crazy around here. This show is going to be blowing up, and I hope you guys enjoy all the content and the new voices, and not just hear my voice that apparently some of you said my voice puts you to sleep. And hey, listen, if I'm Bob Rossing you, I guess thank you, right? If you have no idea who Bob Ross is, YouTube him. I mean, if you were a 90s kid, you know who Bob Ross was. Look, I still sometimes listen to him if I want to fall asleep. He's got the most soothing voice in the history of humanity. And he's just an amazing painter beyond that. But I have no idea. I never thought I'd say the name Bob Ross on this show. But I did. And there you go. So before we get going, I have a couple of housekeeping things. As this show grows, we're going to be adding exclusive content to the Patreon feed. Right now, there is an ad-free experience on that feed. 100% ad-free. There's no ads whatsoever that you can check out there at patreon.com/WWE podcast. Pretty easy to remember. And there's also videos that I'm beginning to put up a couple of times a week and maybe more. That's exclusive to Patreon, so head on over there, and I may be eventually putting some additional podcasts there that are exclusive to that feed as well. So check that out at patreon.com/WWE podcast. I think you guys will enjoy it. And I recently put up a poll, too, that asked, hey, how can I make this better? And some of you said top tens list. Some of you said more audio, exclusive audio, more video. Got across the board response. So expect more there. I will just say that. All right. Well, today's show is all about Monday Night Raw. And of course, things that go off the rails. That's just how this show goes. If you expect a complete, detailed, in-depth play-by-play, every corner and every nook and cranny of Monday Night Raw reviewed, well, this is not the show for you, because we talk about Monday Night Raw. Of course, it is centered around Monday Night Raw, and we get into the major topics of the show. We talk about Hogan and Flair at Crown Jewel that was announced this past Monday night. Brock Lesnar's attack on Rey Mysterio and Dominic, which I absolutely loved. A really dark part of me loved that. I just say that. And, oh, you're, what's wrong with you? I effing loved it. And I ain't apologizing for it. That is the Brock Lesnar I know and love and I missed. I'll just say that. We also talk about the very uncomfortable length of time that Bobby Lashley and Lana made out. Very, just, I don't know where the hell this stands. I'm not sure. But maybe it's, I don't know. I felt like I was watching an 80s porn movie with Rusev standing there looking like he was the, you know, stereotypical 80s porn guy. And a little bit of Ron Jeremy going on there. I don't know. But it was a little weird. It was a little weird. And I don't know where they're going with it. But again, and as you'll hear with my analysis with Zach, I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I just was like, hey, as Hurricane Helms said, what's up with that? I mean, that's my reaction to that whole thing. I'm willing to give it a chance. I just have no freaking idea how to feel about it. I really don't. But it's clearly leading to a Rusev and Bobby Lashley match. So a lot of stuff we talked about. Of course, we also get into the SmackDown, massive SmackDown show that's happening this Friday on Fox, and the possibility of what The Rock could do at this show. Lots of different possibilities, including some things that go really off the beaten path and potential matches for The Rock. Yeah, I know you're saying he said he's done with wrestling, and I agree, but we kind of fantasy book a little bit there. So tons of stuff. Austin possibly returning for SmackDown on Friday, just a whole slew of things that are just covered in this show that we cover for almost 2 hours. It's just craziness. So if you love long form audio, this is going to be the podcast for you. And again, I'll be back tomorrow with some more analysis. And as Friday nights have now taken the SmackDown show to it and made Friday night its home, I may be switching up my wrestling nostalgia to Tuesday. Or to Wednesday, rather, and have my SmackDown Live review on Sunday, because I'm going to keep the same days I'm recording, but maybe flip the switch on those two. I'll see how this week goes, and maybe I'll do that. But again, same days I'm recording, maybe just slight change of topics based on WWE's change in SmackDown being done on Friday rather than Tuesday. So, so tomorrow, I'll be continuing my in-depth review and preview as we go closer to the SmackDown debut on Fox, which is pretty much a pay-per-view. It's a televised free pay-per-view is what it is. So we're looking forward to that and maybe discuss some of the news coming out of the wire. So there'll be a lot to unpack as we just rattle off the biggest week in professional wrestling history. I mean, as far as debuts of Fox and debuts of new promotions and head-to-head competition between organizations for the first time since the Monday Night Wars. And yeah, it may not be a war, but it's head-to-head competition. How about that? So, all right. Well, guys, at the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. There really isn't anything better, right? Sunday comes along where you got to go to work Monday, but football's always there for you, right? They're that, like, best friend that comes with you on Sunday. They're always there. There's just nothing like the NFL. And there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. So how do you do that? You go to mybookie.ag. Easy, right? Mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. All you have to do is head to mybookie.ag. Just do the smart thing. If you're going to bet on football this season, just bet with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, just try a parlay. If all of your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings, and no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year to bet, hands down. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Just use promo code WWE to activate the offer. That's promo code WWE to activate that offer of doubling your deposit. Go visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid. So let's get right to it. Let's get to the conversation with myself and Zach. And again, guys, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Until then, see you next time. All right, welcome to the WWE Podcast. Very big day today. Very big day because not only are we going to be discussing Monday Night Raw in its season premiere, that was a complete overhaul of the set. We got our pyro back. We got an attack from Brock Lesnar on Dominic and Rey Mysterio, which I want to talk about in just a couple of minutes. We've got a huge week, not just in WWE, but also with AEW NXT going head-to-head for the first time ever in AEW's debut of Dynamite tomorrow night on TNT. And then Friday, of course, is no longer SmackDown Live, folks. It is just Friday Night SmackDown or SmackDown premiere on Fox with The Rock returning. Brock Lesnar is going to be there. CM Punk, is he suddenly being hired by WWE again? Tons of stuff to talk about. But with all of that being said, I would like to, at this time, introduce my co-host for today and your host for the AEW podcast starting tomorrow and debuting on Thursday, Zach Perez. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Glad to be here for a really crazy week of wrestling.
And this is the week that we really looked at and go, oh my God, look at all the wrestling we have this week. It's I think Thursday is the only day that we may not have wrestling. I'm pretty sure. I mean, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, obviously two shows Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, or maybe Saturday. I can't think of anything happening Saturday. So it is 5 days of wrestling. And then Sunday, obviously, yeah, you got Hell in a Cell. So it's just a wacky week. So I honestly, like, I don't even know where to begin. I guess I just want to ask you, because this is probably the biggest show story coming out of Monday Night Raw. Zach, what did you think of Brock Lesnar coming out and attacking Rey Mysterio and his son Dominic, which is really the story here? It's not so much Rey Mysterio, but Dominic. And where the hell is this going with WWE? What's the end game here?
Yeah, I really thought that kind of caught me off guard. You know, I expected some kind of stare down, or maybe he would kind of come in and try and rescue his dad or something like that, and then quickly shuffle out of the ring. But when he threw him over the barricade like that, it just instantly brought my mind back to the Zach Gowen beatdown that Brock Lesnar did way back in the day, the one-legged wrestler who came into the WWE. That was the same kind of out of nowhere, almost cringeworthy beatdown, and it worked so perfectly. The whole crowd was into it. The heat was, you could feel it. It was really, it felt like the closest thing, I think, to the Attitude Era that I've seen in quite some time with Brock.
Yeah, it did. It was unexpected, and it was brutal. However, and I tweeted this out too, and I feel like maybe a bad person, but just some dark part of my soul really enjoyed that. And I don't know why. I have nothing, no ill will towards Dominic and or Rey Mysterio, but to me, maybe I enjoyed it so much because Brock Lesnar is Brock Lesnar when he does that kind of stuff. And especially the heel Brock Lesnar, as you alluded to, a good analogy of Zach Gowen back in the early 2000s of him beating down a one-legged a wrestler at the time. And that was brutal to watch and still uncomfortable to watch. I remember he threw him down a set of stairs too. And that is something that I think we've missed from the heel Brock Lesnar character, is a beatdown of somebody of much less stature and somebody that is almost – it's almost like a child size compared to him. And I don't think that this is going towards a Rey Mysterio Brock Lesnar match. I think that would be ill-advised. I don't believe that would be a good idea because there's really no competition there. You know, that's not David versus Goliath. Like that's just a squash, and it should be because of the real size difference between the two. I understand that Rey Mysterio is the underdog, but I don't think that's the payoff here. I have my thoughts on where this is going, but before I give mine, I want to hear yours. Any ideas of where this could be going with Brock Lesnar and why he attacked those two?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I had some different thoughts about it at first. I was thinking maybe they would do some sort of two-on-one handicap match and have Dominic make his debut, you know, maybe under the name Dom Mysterio with a mask or something like that. That would be a pretty cool thing to do. But like you said, the problem is that it would be a squash match, and it would feel a little weird to be right off the bat just jobbing the pair of them out in their first match as a tag team. So I think immediately I kind of threw that idea out of my mind. And then I read some interesting things this morning about the idea that Cain Velasquez may be getting set up for a match with Brock Lesnar. He recently just did a couple matches for AAA in Mexico, and actually one show of those was in New York City at Madison Square Garden, the Hulu Theater. And so he ended up having some talks with WWE, and the idea is because he took his heavyweight belt in UFC, it would make for a really good Fox clash with the whole, you know, real sports feel that they seem to be wanting to go for with it. So that was an interesting thought that I think maybe would make sense given they're both of Mexican heritage. You know, they could very well do some sort of storyline like that where they introduce them as the ringer, so to speak.
Absolutely. I mean, that would, you talk about ratings. I mean, that would be a ratings monster. The issue, the only thing I see with that is, like, what's the payoff outside of Cain Velasquez and Brock Lesnar going face to face? I mean, I don't think Cain Velasquez is at any point where he could actually compete on a professional wrestling level and have a good match with Brock Lesnar at this point. I don't know if they're there up to WWE standard of quality of matches. Maybe it's something they do down the line, and maybe Rey Mysterio and Dominic are the ones to introduce him and say, hey, look, we know that we can't beat you even as a team, but we have somebody that could. And maybe that's how they introduce Cain Velasquez, and there's some quick interaction or quick, quick hits, and, you know, it's left there, and maybe it ends up at WrestleMania or something like that. My theory is, outside of that one, which I think is absolutely plausible, is that this is a setup for Brock Lesnar when he faces Kofi Kingston on SmackDown as a foil for Brock to somehow lose to Kofi Kingston, which we all know. I mean, I'm very clear on how I feel about Kofi Kingston as champion. I needed off him, you know, yesterday. And I think that if Kofi is to retain, this is a good way to have him retain, is to have Dominic and Rey Mysterio get their revenge and take away what Brock, you know, holds dear and most to his heart, is championships and money, right? So maybe they're able to somehow cost Brock Lesnar that match. I mean, that's the only other thing that I can think of as a payoff for this beatdown.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, too, because what you could do at that point, too, is maybe have, you know, Brock Lesnar actually win in that situation, you know, them try to get involved and they actually end up making Kofi lose. That would be a very kind of ratings grab kind of moment to happen, you know, where it would be an accidental screw job sort of situation. So I think that could be a very interesting direction to go, however they choose to do it, because it definitely seems to be like they're going to go with, in my opinion, Brock Lesnar with the belt for Fox because of the big name and the MMA background and everything like that. I just think that they're kind of going that way. But it would be a good way to maybe further that along and make it not on the premiere by doing something like that with Mysterio and Dominic.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's universally believed that Brock Lesnar is probably going to be the one to walk out of SmackDown, Friday Night SmackDown, as the WWE champion. I think it's pretty well believed of that. What scares me is that when things are that well, quote, locked in by fans, Vince McMahon likes to always throw the curveball in and go, no, you guys think you know the outcome. Guess what I'm going to do? Just as how many times we thought Roman Reigns was going to defeat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and it was just a foregone conclusion. And what did Vince McMahon do? He flipped the script. So could Vince McMahon do that because it's just so obvious that Brock would win here? Yeah, I think he could. But I don't think he should do it out of the fact of just doing it to to surprise fans, because I'm of the belief that don't surprise me just to surprise me if it's not the right thing to do. The right thing to do here is to crown Brock WWE champion. And rumor has it that WWE has signed him to more dates than he originally had on his contract. WWE certainly has the funds to do it. And if you're going to have Brock not be an absentee champion as he was with the Universal Championship, I think it's the right move and the move that they should make, and not just try to surprise us with the outcome.
Yeah, definitely. And you look at, like you said, moments with Brock Lesnar in the past, and he's a perfect example of how those kind of surprise finishes just because can be terrible. You know, I thought that him taking the streak from The Undertaker at WrestleMania was one of the worst ideas in wrestling. I don't think that that was necessary whatsoever. I don't think it really did anything that it could have with what a huge streak that was. And it just kind of shows when you go that direction just to surprise people, it never really works unless you have a really, really good reason to do it. And I think that it is, like you said, the right decision at this time to go with Brock Lesnar as champion. And with him going full time, I think that this could possibly be one of his best reigns, given the way that they're going to put so much emphasis on SmackDown, and I'm sure when the draft rolls around, they're going to bring in lots of big names and surprises. And so I think that you could see some really interesting matches that'll kind of push Brock as an in-ring competitor with some really big names.
Definitely. There's a lot that they could do with Brock as champion. Number one, he has not been on SmackDown Live full-time in, my God, 15 years. I don't think that they haven't had him in a televised match in 15 years, and that speaks volumes. And when we say full-time for Brock Lesnar is not full-time for, you know, the typical wrestler on the roster of WWE. Full-time for Brock means I'm there on television every week. Full-time for the typical wrestler means I'm doing house shows, I'm doing appearances in addition to TV. So when we say full-time, we probably should specify that, hey, Brock Lesnar's on a alternate universe when it comes to contracts and so forth. Brock Lesnar has a slew of opponents he has not touched on with SmackDown Live. Now, the problem then becomes, is there anybody credible enough to actually face Brock Lesnar in a one-on-one situation that would be believable for him to be threatened of losing the championship? And the answer, I don't know. I don't see anybody on the roster. Maybe Samoa Joe could be a rematch, although he's a heel right now too, and Brock is a heel. So you'd have to have some strong baby faces, either maybe called up from NXT or maybe somebody from the Raw roster if they're drafted to SmackDown that could face him as well. So there's some but there are matchups out there. I mean, I think that there are matchups that Brock could have outside of this program with Kofi, which will probably last a few months after Kofi gets his rematch and Brock retains. But there's some stories to tell. I'm glad that Brock is back on SmackDown, even though he hasn't been officially drafted. I think we all know that that's where he's going to eventually land. I do wish that he would grow his beard out. I liked when he came back. I know it's a small thing, but something like that can really make you feel fresh in the eyes of fans. Just grow your beard out, make yourself look a little bit different than you normally have, but I guess I'm nitpicking.
No, I definitely agree with you there. I really liked when he returned like that. You know, there's a running kind of internet joke about how bearded Brock is like the evolved form of Brock Lesnar, you know, the penultimate. So I definitely think that it's something that could definitely be a good switch. You know, maybe if he leaves the razor down up until Friday night, you know, he'll have a little something there to work with. But I definitely think that Brock Lesnar will be at his best on Friday night SmackDown, and hopefully with the WWE Championship. And maybe they'll bring in some big names, like you said, to kind of shake up the idea that he might not have anybody quite on his level, especially when he grows the beard out, I'm sure.
Well, that's a superpower. I mean, like that's how he's like hulking up. Let's talk about some other things for Monday night. Of course, we'll get a little bit more into the Friday Night SmackDown coming up this week. Totally switching gears, but it's what closed Raw. And yes, The Fiend attacks Seth Rollins. I mean, there's not really too much to dive into there. It's just kind of another night on Raw for Seth Rollins, who is, you know, wets his pants every time he hears the music and sees The Fiend. So, you know, maybe we'll touch on that soon too. But Lana and Bobby Lashley. Rusev is back. He's got his, you know, 80s porn star look going on with his mustache. And we have Lana coming out as Bobby Lashley surprisingly returns after he was injured for months. introduces Lana very clumsily as he kept pointing back to the stage, and I don't know if WWE wasn't ready for Lana or Bobby was supposed to wait a little bit longer. The timing seemed a little clunky, but ultimately Lana did come out, and they start making out for an uncomfortable amount of time. You and I talked a little bit about this off the air, but what are your general thoughts on this?
Yeah, it really, like, just blew my mind that was the way that they chose to handle the entire ending of Raw. Like, having Lana come out and return, okay, that makes sense, given that Rusev just returned, and they botched that miserably, in my opinion, as well. But that's a whole other thing. But now they bring Lana back for this weird one-off storyline that just kind of came out of nowhere, and they return Bobby Lashley a month ahead of schedule just to have him be a part of this as well. It just seems so strange the directions they're going with the storylines when they have so many tools at their disposal and they just choose to throw them in these weird romance angles for no apparent reason. And the fact that it's such a big week for wrestling and they coined everything the premiere week, and they're saying, you know, that they're putting a commitment on making this a strong week of wrestling. It was so weird that was the way that they chose to end it. And then they just tried to clean it up at the end with a little bit of The Fiend.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they said. They're going to make a strong week of wrestling. And yet they choose the entertainment, sports entertainment-y part of the wrestling to end the show for a go-home show for a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. Yeah, it was a little weird. As I said to you a little bit off the air, like, I'm not really up or down on it because I don't know what the hell's going on. I mean, apparently they're still married, but again, you would have to have a really strong marriage in order to stand there and watch these two make out for a minute and a half and not actually wonder underneath, you know, all the characters and all the storylines, hey, like, do you wonder if she actually is feeling something here? Like, is there something actually that might go on? I mean, like, so if they're actually married, man, that's a lot of trust. That's a hell of an angle to pose. Now, again, maybe they are having marital problems in real life. Maybe they are actually split in real life. I have not heard. It's been kept under wraps pretty damn well, unless I just haven't been paying attention. But I'm not understanding it. Bobby Lashley is as, you know, as interesting as watching paint dry. And, you know, it kind of brings me back to also when Lana was with Dolph Ziggler on SmackDown and all that. And, like, I remember how weird that was. And she was dressing up in plaid and skimpy shorts, and they were making out. And Rusev was angry. And then that whole storyline just went by the wayside. And she was back with Rusev. I don't know where this ends up, obviously, with a match between Bobby Lashley and Rusev. That's fine, I guess. The fans organically gravitate towards Rusev. He's a likable guy. He's a funny, naturally funny guy from not just character, but backstage. From everything I read and see, people love the guy. He's really, you know, a very solid human being from everything I see. So people are going to clearly back Rusev here and go against Lashley, but I don't know what this is about. I have no idea. I don't know what to do with it other than after about 20 seconds, I'm like, are they still making out?
Yeah, you know, it really caught me off guard just how long it lasted for, too. And the botched introduction didn't help things, and the silence among the crowd, it felt like it hung forever. And you know, to your point about the trust, if they, I do believe, like you said, that they are really married. And I read an interesting tweet from a while back from Lance Storm, where he said that Randy Savage once told him he had one angle with his wife, and she wasn't his wife anymore. So that kind of speaks to how these type of relationships work when you bring them on screen. So, you know, I definitely take advice from Randy Savage when it comes to relationships and wrestling, because he's definitely quite experienced in that department. And it just doesn't make sense. You know, you had the weird interview with Rusev earlier in the night where they said, you know, where is Lana? And he just no-sold it, I guess you would say, in the interview, and just kind of moved on and was making it seem like he didn't want to talk about it, and it was just left at that. So that makes it even more strange, because there's no threads, there's no leading to anything beyond, like you said, just Rusev versus Bobby Lashley for some reason. And now, why is Lana to have to be involved in that too? It just felt so strange to have these all come together in one storyline.
I will give them credit for this small thing of having Maria Kanellis speak with, I don't know if it was Charlie or another one of the interviewers, saying, that Rusev is not the father of her child, even though it was heavily implied on SmackDown Live that it was. And then he attacked Mike Kanellis for absolutely no reason, and I guess returned as a heel, scrapping that storyline. But at least if they're scrapping it, and clearly they are, they have mentioned it on Raw to tie it in a knot and say goodbye to it. I mean, so I will give them that small bit of credit, even though that was terribly, a terrible way to reintroduce Rusev from the get-go.
Yeah, I just don't understand what they don't see in how good Rusev is. It feels like him and Samoa Joe are kind of stuck in this zone where they entertain the crowd so easily and it comes so naturally. Whatever position you place them in, anywhere on the card, they can work with it and they can make people have that connection. But for some reason, WWE has no idea what they're doing with them on a week-to-week basis. And Rusev especially, though, it's just, why bring him back for this? You know, he was a big name. He was being tossed around in rumor mills for, oh, maybe he'll sign to AEW. Maybe he'll leave. Maybe him and Lana both leave. And to bring him back in just such a weird kind of lackluster way and then to just have it brushed off and thrown under the table, it was just a really weird experience all in all.
It was weird. I mean, I don't even know what more to say about it. I really don't. I really don't. So now, before we continue any further, I do want to let everyone know, and I said at the beginning of the show, that Zach's going to be hosting by himself. I will not be there, so that's a cool deal if y'all are tired of my voice. You will get to hear Zach by himself discuss AEW on a weekly basis, AEW Dynamite, and any time that they have a pay-per-view. He'll be doing a review, and those will drop on Thursdays. So, Zach, just tell everyone a little bit about the show that you'll be doing and how they can follow you on social media.
Yeah, so if you're interested in the show, you can follow me at Spots High on Twitter. I'm going to be basically going into all things AEW. I've been following them since the pay-per-view back at All Out. So I've been following very closely along, keeping a very watchful eye. Kind of brought me back into wrestling kind of as a full-time fan. So it's definitely something that's kind of near and dear to my heart, and I love what they're doing. I actually met Cody Rhodes at a Northeast Wrestling show at the Joseph Bruno Stadium, and that was a really interesting experience. Really nice guy, really attentive to the kids there and everything like that. So it was a cool experience, and to see somebody like that thriving and making a great promotion like AEW, it was something that really, really brought me in and said that I was going to be making sure to be a big supporter of the company. And this podcast is the perfect way of doing it. I'm going to dive into everything to do with anything that goes on Dynamite and definitely try and bring an interesting and very unfiltered take on what's going to go on. I'm not just going to be biased because I like the people involved and everything like that. You know, I'll definitely be very, very straightforward with my opinion, as I always am.
And that's just it. That's what we love about this whole WWE podcast umbrella is we don't have a dog in the fight, meaning we don't have somebody that we have to answer to at these companies. We just straight shoot. You know, whether, and I love WWE, you love WWE and AEW, but if we see something that can be improved, we spell it out. We say, hey, and we do it out of love. We don't just do it to bitch and moan like, you know, a lot of shows do. We do it because, hey, we're passionate about this and we know it could be a whole lot better. And that's why we do what we do.
Exactly. And, you know, it's like when you've watched something for so many years and you're so invested in the world of wrestling and you see it, you really want it to be the best that it can be. It's almost like you're kind of raising a child because you grew up with it as a child yourself. You know, it's like you look back on it and you just go, oh, I've seen what great wrestling is. You know, I've seen the peak of what things can really be when they're clicking. Why can't we just bring it to that? And so, you know, being able to discuss that with wrestling fans and bring my opinion to wrestling fans, it's just really the perfect way to network that concept of trying to build wrestling as the best it can be. And I think that's really what all wrestling fans really want.
It is. That's a good point, too, because we know how good wrestling can be. The golden era of the Attitude Era, of course, was great. But outside of the Attitude Era, there were some really good times. I mean, even the Ruthless Aggression Era produced some great rivalries. Edge and John Cena, for an example. I loved that rivalry. Of course, the overuse of Randy Orton and John Cena, although really great, was a bit overused. But there have been some rivalries and moments that have been created outside of that golden era. And the point is that we know how awesome wrestling can be. And that's what keeps bringing us back. And knowing that that potential is still out there is what drives us to want to see the product improve.
Definitely. And it's like looking through all the different companies that have come and gone. I was a big follower of TNA when they first started coming from weekly pay-per-view to television. I remember thinking that was the biggest deal in the world to me back then, because I was following them and thinking that they were going to be this big promotion, basically what AEW is now. So I remember that, following that closely, seeing the wars with AJ Styles and Samoa Joe when they were still a little bit green, and then even going back further to watching ECW and trying to get my hands on any DVD I could at any garage sale or anything to watch whatever matches and pay-per-views I could. It's just, you know, you find that love, and you know what you fall in love with the wrestling, and you know what to find, and you just kind of crave that and want to bring that out by voicing your opinion. And I think that's what's so great about wrestling is, in one way or another, if you're loud enough, it does end up getting heard.
It does. WWE has really made a conscious effort over the last few months, and, well, really more recently with the rise of AEW, and they can say whatever they want. I think that they know that if they sit on their laurels, that fans are going to gravitate towards a product that feels fresh, that feels new, that feels edgy, and back to the way that things used to be. And Vince McMahon can call it a blood and guts company all they want, but as Cody Rhodes said, and he's damn right, that this business was built on blood and guts. So for Vince McMahon to be holier than thou, that, oh, they're just blood and guts, as it's some kind of lowbrow type of quality, doesn't realize that he built the WWF into what it was during the Attitude Era that was a lot of blood and guts. And so that is not any kind of argument or any kind of shot at AEW at all. This is something that I'm glad that there's a product out there that's not PG. You know, when you're looking for a product like AEW that has occasional swearing or maybe a little sexuality, I don't need a ton of that in wrestling, but some of the more violent but safe type of wrestling, the edgy product that many of us have craved since the PG era began in 2008, I think is going to gravitate a lot of those fans that maybe have gone away from WWE since they went super soft back to a product that may be bringing them back to their childhood or whatever it may be.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because you can look at all the different movements that have happened in wrestling. There's always been the hardcore wrestling fan, the hardcore fan, whatever you want to call them, the mark, you know, all different names, but basically all the same thing, of the person who is craving something different beyond the mainstream. It's almost like it's a weirdly, you know, everybody kind of does crave something different from everything that WWE is doing, because there's just so many different aspects to what makes a wrestling program successful. You know, it's successful to different segments, and that's the beauty of trying to get it right. It's like a science experiment, you know, so piecing everything together. But because of that, you know, it's basically like this forbidden thing to be this hardcore wrestling fan segment who craves something outside of the WWE. And I think that at StarCast, CM Punk really made an interesting point and said, don't let the promotions divide you. And basically, you can watch all the wrestling that's out there. And that's so true. You know, you don't have to just pigeonhole yourself in and say, oh, if I'm not a fan of this or I'm not a fan of that, then I'm this forbidden wrestling fan. Because we all do have that aspect in us of, oh, if I could fantasy book, I would change this, or I would put a feud together between these two for the WWE championship. So I think that's a healthy part of wrestling, and it should be more embraced than it is demonized.
That, yeah, look, just because I watch WWE doesn't mean I'm not going to watch AEW. I mean, the fact that I may not watch AEW or NXT is only because of the fact that I don't have time. I mean, like, I've got so many other things going on. I produce 4 shows a week, you know, personal life, full-time job. I just simply don't have the time. It's not because I don't want to watch it. And, you know, like you just said, you don't have to be a single part of just one of those promotions. Like, as CM Punk said at StarCast, I saw some of that interview. He said that, you know, the real winners here are going to be the fans. It's true. you know, we don't have to just pick one. You can watch them all, and that's the beauty of it. So I want to touch a little bit on a little bit more on Monday Night Raw, and then get into the big show coming up on Friday for SmackDown, which I think is pay-per-view quality in terms of how much they're promoting it and the stars that are going to be there, the matches that are there, and, you know, rightfully so. This is the biggest TV deal WWE's had in their history. So, but before we do that, I want to ask you about a couple other things from Monday Night Raw. I mean, we touched on the major things, but having the tag team champions, Bobby Roode and Ziggler, face Heavy Machinery for the tag team titles, and Bobby Roode and Ziggler win. Now, I don't think that the Heavy Machinery is at the point where they should win the tag team championships. I'm fine with them in chase mode for a very long time. I don't need them to shoot to the top. I could go up until next year until I see them as champions. And I'm honestly enjoying Bobby Roode and Ziggler. They both have a direction now instead of just having Ziggler getting speared, 800 times by Goldberg, or having him lose time after time after time to Kofi Kingston or whatever it may be. Ziggler is always the butt of the joke and having him scream on every promo. And by the same token, Bobby Roode, who's been outside of one word, he has been an extremely shallow in terms of depth of character type of person. And I think that he has got a great look. I think he's a very talented individual inside the ring. But outside of his just one word, he's extremely shallow character-wise. So having these two team up, they need each other. And I think they've done a very good job of playing off each other and legitimizing themselves as champions. And I'm fine with them having a really long run with the belts.
You know, I think that it's an interesting setup that they did kind of get put together, and they've worked so well being placed together kind of at a seemingly random, like somebody was just looking at the roster and closed their eyes and pointed. But, you know, now that they've come together, they really have had a good chemistry and they've worked really well together. But, you know, I think that, like you said, Robert Roode, Bobby Roode, whatever they want to call him now, I think that he has a really good future as a singles competitor in the company. And what I would think that would be a really interesting way to play this is, because they kind of came together so quickly, use this title run as a very quick means to get them over, maybe get them looking really strong, go up against, maybe get tested by a couple of the tag teams in that division you're more willing to invest in, you know, maybe have the Street Profits come in and have a matchup with them or something like that, and maybe push them to the limits. But ultimately, I think it would be a great idea to have Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler get split with the WWE draft, and basically leave, you know, maybe have just Robert Roode get drafted so that Dolph Ziggler is left there alone with two title belts and having to vacate and kind of stuck in this, oh, why is it me? Why is it always, you know, me who gets the crap end of the stick, you know? So I think that would be an interesting way to get them both over and to kind of maybe put a mean streak into Ziggler and make him even more angry about the way that he's been wronged by the company and things like that.
Ziggler has been a guy that has been the start-stop master of WWE, where you think he's finally going to get pushed, and then they pull back, pushed, and then pull back. He's in the main event, and then he loses and loses and loses, and then loses again. And so I would not be opposed to that plan. My problem with, though, the only issue – well, a couple issues. Number one, I just don't think WWE has the confidence in Ziggler to ever really carry the ship as a singles competitor. I mean, we've seen it for his entire career. Outside of winning the heavyweight championship a couple of times, which outside of the one that was a cash-in the night after WrestleMania, he hasn't ever had that really meaningful, memorable run. And he's a guy that has always felt he's never reached his full potential, and he's the start-stop master, which makes fans not really care. And WWE has educated us to not care because he talks a good game, he's a good promo, he screams a lot, and he's, I think, is an underrated star that could have been at the top tier for a extended period of time, and he just never had that opportunity. The thing is, the tag team depth is also pretty shallow at this point, at least legitimate tag teams that could compete for a championship. And if you have two tag team championships, to split a team up that has a lot of credibility and 15, 20 years of experience between the two of them, you may want to think twice, only because of the tag team depth. Now, Vince McMahon has been really well known to not value tag team wrestling as much as, you know, say Triple H does, or maybe, you know, somebody else at management level values tag team wrestling. So there's also that. But I just think that right now Ziggler has a home as a tag team competitor that he has never really had before outside of being part of Spirit Squad. He hasn't really had that tag team partner to define himself. So if they're going to split, I don't know if I'd do it yet, because they just got the belts. They seem to be gelling and they have momentum behind them.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that as well. You know, I definitely think that Dolph Ziggler tends to get lost in the shuffle very quickly, forgotten about. It's almost like you said, he is start and stop master. He just kind of begins a storyline and then it's gone before you know it. And it's like, if you blink, you missed it. And I don't seem to understand why they don't see the value that they have with him. But there is some rumors I heard a while back about how he did want to exit from the company and go back to maybe doing his comedy gig and things like that, you know, easing out of wrestling. And I think that he was not allowed to do so. So that could kind of play a part with the way that he's been treated. And maybe now he's kind of accepting it. And that's why they're bringing him back into the mix. But it definitely is a good spot for him, and I think he would get easily lost. So it's definitely interesting to see how they'll book it and how easily they legitimize this team, because it is a little shallow to run through the teams and things like that, and you don't want to start doing the Viking Raiders game and just having them run through jobbers every week.
God, please no. I'm willing to give the Viking Raiders a shot here. I mean, I'm not going to downplay their long-term viability, but they give a lot of bad vibes to me in terms of the Ascension and just the abomination that was the Ascension. And maybe that's because I'm associating and assimilating them as, you know, the Ascension part two, and I don't want to do that. I'm willing to give the Viking Raiders time here to evolve, and they beat Gallows and Anderson this week on Monday Night Raw. So there's that, and I know they went from the Viking Raiders to, I think, the Vikings to the Viking Experience, but now that's the name of their finish. So it took a little time to even get the name down right. So I'm fine with them right now, with the Viking Raiders. I know we're transitioning here to the Viking Raiders, but yeah, I'm fine with it. And WWE needs tag teams to be viable, to have credibility, to feel like they could be actually contenders for a championship. The Viking Raiders are nowhere near that. Gallows and Anderson have been there and probably should have still stayed there, of course, if I were fantasy booking. And now we have Ziggler and we have Robert Roode, which I think is a very credible team that could have long-standing power. But so that's just my quick take on the Raw side of the tag team division.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting to see how they'll try and shape things with the WWE draft. I feel like that's a really looming presence on a lot of what's happening right now, with the move to Fox coming on Friday with SmackDown. I think you'll really see that kind of transition to being the A show now. And so because of that, it'll be interesting to see how it shapes the landscape going forward. Do they rely more heavily on tag teams on SmackDown with Vince's history? Probably not. So maybe Raw becomes the sort of haven of where you can see some good tag team wrestling in the WWE. You know, we've seen in the past where these trends have kind of ebbed and flowed and made SmackDown feel a little different than Raw, and them have different elements, like when the Cruiserweight division was resurrected at one point. Just all different things they've done in the past where it makes them feel different. And that could be something that you see, where the Raw tag team division gets strengthened, and that'll help push the guys like Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode and the Viking Raiders and the OC to have a really deep pool of talent there. And an interesting point that this brings up too is those AOP segments have really been phenomenal as well, and I think that they could be a really big part of whatever division they end up in the, whether it Raw, SmackDown, NXT, whatever they end up going back to. And I think that tag team wrestling as a whole will hopefully get a little bit stronger and maybe move to that 3-hour comfortability of Raw.
I'm glad you brought up AOP, because they are a forgotten team until they have their promo every week. And I actually look forward to it. They remind me a lot of, if you guys have seen Breaking Bad, the twins that were part of the cartel. They remind me a lot of that. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, then this analogy makes no sense. But they remind me a lot of that. And they were two of my favorite characters of the show in one of the most successful shows ever. Beside the point, they have the presence of killers. And of course, this is professional wrestling, but they look like they could kill you and not care. And that's what I love about this team. They have a presence that you had no idea was there until they started cutting these promos. And they are more over now, and people know who they are more now and are, I guess, scared to some extent or impacted emotionally in some way, whether you have an opinion about them now is my point. That is what matters, that you care one way or the other about this team now. You now have an identity for this team that you didn't have before with these sit-down interviews, talking about how they like to inflict pain and nobody's man enough to stand up to them. I'm loving these backstage skits. What about you?
Yeah, it's just been such a highlight every week. And I noticed that they did repeat it the one week from both Raw and SmackDown. And normally when that happens, I would just, you know, stop paying attention for a little bit, look away, wait till that finished up. But because I was so captivated by it, I watched it a second time through. And that made me realize that I really don't do that much unless it's things like the Firefly Funhouse. So the fact that that gave me that kind of reaction really spoke to me and made me go, you know, if they just handled more teams like this, it would be such a stronger division, because they have so many talented teams across all the brands. You know, you look down at NXT and they almost have too many tag teams. So it's something that could very easily be done. And I think that the Viking Raiders, unfortunately, are kind of the opposite of the AOP in this sense, where their gimmick is killing them. Their in-ring performances might be spectacular, you know, in some cases, but it's just not going to run home when you're trying to give this Viking gimmick. And, you know, thankfully now Michael Cole isn't the one saying that join the raid at the beginning of them coming out, because Lord knows that didn't help anything either. But now that we have that removed, I think that Viking Raiders are a perfect example of how to get things wrong with the tag team. And AOP is the perfect example of how to get things right and really make them feel like a presence before they even re-debut, I should say.
Yeah, and that's what's happening right now. Like, AOP is getting a second chance at life. It's like a grand reopening for a store is exactly what AOP is getting a chance to do here. And I would argue that they're more over than the Viking Raiders. And the Viking Raiders have been on Raw for weeks now, just kind of, you know, squashing people. But we have no idea who they are. They kind of look a little hokey with some of the things they wear, and it's very gimmicky. And there's not a lot of substance, whereas AOP is not so much gimmicky, but there's a lot of substance there. We know who they are. They're telling us their mission, what they enjoy doing, inflicting pain, their presence, the way they carry themselves and speak, and the way they look at the camera, just kind of dead-eyed, no emotion, makes you feel something, and much more than the Viking Raiders have. And Viking Raiders are, again, they're more flashy, and they're more of the entertainment-y part of the sports entertainment genre, which I'm not always a fan of. It can be good, but I think if the Viking Raiders had context and you knew who they were, that people would care more. But listen to the crowd reaction. It's like zero to next to zero when the Viking Raiders come out. But why should they react? We know nothing about them. And if you didn't watch NXT, then you especially have no clue about the Viking Raiders. So I think that that's another point. But one other thing that I wanted to touch on Monday Night Raw before we get to SmackDown with you is Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch and this whole feud, which my quick take, and I'll throw it to you, is that I think it hasn't gotten the attention that it probably should have, and it hasn't really reached its peak. And I don't honestly even think it's deserving of the Cell. To me, and I've said this week after week, the Hell in a Cell is reserved for feuds and programs that are a blow-off, where it's maybe the third match of this program, and they've had, you know, each one has gotten a victory, and this is the rubber match. Doesn't always have to follow that formula, but this should never be the very first match of a program. Well, this is actually the second, but it should never be at the beginning of the program, where it doesn't feel like it's the crescendo. It doesn't feel like it's deserving of the Cell. They just, you know, we had Sasha come back and she attacked Becky with a chair. But after that, Sasha was not allowed to basically speak after that. And we didn't hear from her until last Monday night on Raw, which I think really did damage to her momentum when she came back. She was white hot coming back. She was getting booed hot as a heel. And that was awesome. And that was, you know, Sasha coming back with, you know, just blazing. And then she just stopped speaking. And it was just her in tag matches with Bayley. And it's like, okay, well, we need to hear more from you. And we got a little bit of that from Monday night. But me personally, I'm looking forward to the match. I just don't think it's deserving of hallowed ground that is Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, I can completely agree with that. It very much feels like it's mirroring another feud that's in the WWE down in NXT with Killian Dane and Matt Riddle, where they're just constantly coming out and attacking each other, but it's really not going anywhere. There's really no substance other than just, oh, every time they're out, you can expect that the other person's going to come out and attack them. And that doesn't really drive forward a feud. And I think that you're seeing the same kind of sputtering wheels in the mud kind of moments with these feuds where they're at now. Because like you said, it doesn't feel like it deserves to be in Hell in a Cell. You've had some quotes that have been good. Like one that stuck out to me from Becky Lynch was, she said, "You made it personal, I'm going to make it painful." And the crowd kind of had a nice reaction to that and things. So there have been some moments where Becky has kind of really sold it, but there hasn't been enough of those moments. It's just kind of been these one-off little maybe one word or one sentence quotables that you can take out of it. But neither one really has much of a presence as to why they're feuding with each other than just simple attacks. And it just feels like there should have been a lot more there, a lot more back and forth, and a lot more thought put into the way that they were presenting this feud. And it should have been something that had a large payoff. Hell in a Cell would have been great, but it needed a lot more build-up to make it so that it could be great.
That's the problem. And look, I think that these two are going to have a very good match. I don't think the quality of the match is going to be the problem. The problem I have is the story doesn't warrant Hell in a Cell. And unfortunately, WWE has just driven Hell in a Cell into part of the pay-per-view schedule of the annual pay-per-views. I don't like that. I know that they're all about gimmicky stuff, and they put TLC as a pay-per-view of its own, and the Elimination Chamber is a pay-per-view of its own. To me, you bring out those matches when the story warrants it. I don't need you to just put it in, and whatever feuds happen to be going on at the time, get the matches put inside the cell. It's backwards thinking, and it waters down what Hell in a Cell used to mean. I mean, think about what the cell meant. When you had somebody challenge somebody to a Hell in a Cell match, you were like, oh my God, it's going to be a Hell in a Cell match. Now it's like, oh yeah, it's part of the pay-per-view schedule. We'll see. You know, we'll see that later in the year. I don't like to feel that way when Hell in a Cell rolls around. Think about the matches we've seen in Hell in a Cell. To me, the greatest of all time, Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, 97, Bad Blood. First one ever, yes, but it was psychologically the best put together program I've ever seen for Hell in a Cell ever. Yes, we had the 1998 King of the Ring with Mick Foley and his infamous drop off the cell. We had Cactus Jack retire inside the cell in 2000 against Triple H and then return for WrestleMania 16. But there have been so many great moments inside the cell. The six-man Hell in a Cell match with Kurt Angle, Rock, Rikishi. I mean, there have been some really great moments. And those were matches that happened because the story warranted it instead of it having been built into the schedule of WWE's pay-per-view lineup.
Yeah, and that's something that I've really despised, is that they've roped in things like TLC, Hell in a Cell, Elimination Chamber, and they've made it so that they're part of the schedule and you know what to expect. I loved the days of when the stipulation matches would be part of the surprise of the pay-per-view. It was kind of part of the fun to not know exactly what type of matchups you would see. And a lot of the great storylines that I remember from the Attitude Era were in leading up to the pay-per-view, there would be a surprise announcement of what the stipulation would be, and it would amplify the intensity. And I think that's become kind of lost by these one-off pay-per-view events of where you're having a gimmick match number 17 on the monthly schedule. So I think that it's something that they should go away from, especially now that they're doing things with Fox and they're making the television feel like a big deal. I think that they should go the same route with the pay-per-views and make them feel more unique and go back to just simply naming them actual names and not match stipulations. And I think that'll go a long way, along with the added pyro and flashy things like that, having real new sets for each individual pay-per-view again. All those sort of things will help add to the mystique of making it feel like a bigger deal again. And that starts with the storytelling, but also the way that they handle the pay-per-views, like you said.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. But I think we're probably, you know, this is falling on deaf ears when it comes to WWE. I think they are locked in their ways. They love these gimmicky pay-per-views where they can try to, you know, sell the stipulation instead of trying to sell the story, which would in essence actually sell the pay-per-view instead of just having these gimmicks try to sell the pay-per-view, which is exactly what they're doing here. Hell in a Cell, again, I mean, I've made my case. I'm not going to repeat myself. But, as far as the Sasha Banks and Becky program goes, getting back to that, it has been a little bit underwhelming. As you said, there's kind of very little foundation for this. Like, Sasha never really came back with a reason why she decided to attack Becky. Like, she never really came back and, you know, there's this deep-seated hatred when she left. Yeah, she said that, well, she was basically saying, oh, it should have been me in the main event of the main event of WrestleMania, not you. That's not good enough for me. I mean, jealousy is something that, you know, to me doesn't work. Why didn't she attack Charlotte if that's the case, or Ronda Rousey? I mean, like, why Becky? I mean, it doesn't hold a lot of water with me that it's just because of that. And I don't know if they can't tie it back to anything in NXT. I mean, I just don't see something that would garner a reason for her to come back and do this. And if she did it, again, they haven't done a great job of continuing the explanation. It's just kind of, you said, attack, counterattack, 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 Sasha runs away. There's no substance to this, and maybe it's not, maybe it could be solved or at least helped greatly by a sit-down promo with these two or some kind of crazy video package that somebody could tie, somehow dig through the files of, you know, of these two in the annals of time through NXT and whatever, that they could pull something from. And instead it's kind of a shallow feud. Two amazing talents, don't get me wrong, amazing talents, and the match is going to be great, but the story is weak.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think that they could have done so much more, especially because it feels like they're just trying to force this to lead to an eventual four horsewomen matchup in some way, shape, or form, whether it be with them as a team or going two versus two. So I think that it's just, they could have done a lot more in setting that up. You know, they had Bayley as a face before Sasha returned. They could have done a double cross thing where they, you know, all were happy and friendly and everything like that. And then Bayley and Sasha turn and become the heels and double turn with Charlotte Flair and make her a face again. There were just so many different options they could have went that would have better utilized the history that they all have together with NXT and coming up together and starting this women's revolution. It's just something that could have been approached in such a better manner and fleshed out and made a bigger deal. And instead, it just feels like they're rushing things along to try and just satisfy the audience and get that match to us. And it's not always about getting the match that we want. It's also about building to that match properly so that it feels like the big deal that it is that we've always wanted. You know, having this big match feel is a big part of it. And this build up has just been a little confusing with how much talent is involved.
Right. I think that's a good point, is that this is not a match that we would say, we don't want to see that. I'm sure if you had polled people before Sasha returned and said, imagine if Sasha returns as a heel and attacks Becky Lynch and we get the match. And we would, all of us, 9 out of 10, would probably say, hell yes, I want to see that. The problem has been, and I'm sure creatively that this has clearly been the case, is that there hasn't ever been a true reason why Sasha attacked her. And especially following up with that on a weekly basis, it's just kind of like they were in a boardroom going, well, Sasha's coming back. We need a strong heel. Let's have her, you know, turn on Becky. Well, what's the story? Well, I don't know. Just have them keep attacking each other for a couple of weeks and build to the Hell in a Cell. I mean, that's honestly what we've gotten. So I really don't believe that there has been any true conversation or long-term reasoning and continuity for telling a story that would make complete sense for Sasha to be doing this. Again, I'm not complaining that this match is happening. I think it's going to be great. I'm just a little bit weary of the reasons why it's happening. And maybe if this match it happened a month from now and we had another month to get to Hell in a Cell, I wouldn't be saying this and we'd get more of a story. But it's almost as if they get to Raw and they each get handed their scripts of what they're doing that night. And it's just kind of like, well, you know, Sasha, you're going to attack Becky this week, and Becky, you're going to attack Sasha next week. And, you know, say a couple of cute words, but, you know, again, there's no substance. There's nothing you can really sink your teeth into and go, oh, that's effing awesome. Like, that's why this is happening. It's just kind of like, well, I attacked you, so now we're going to have a match in Hell in a Cell. So, again, I think we've made our point. The storyline just doesn't hold a lot of ground. I think what's keeping this match interesting and the people that are interested in this match wanting to see it is the name value, the talent that these two have, and yes, it's inside Hell in a Cell, which is always interesting, especially when you have women involved for that match. So moving on to the SmackDown show, SmackDown on Fox, the pay-per-view that's not a pay-per-view this Friday. And this show, might as well be, keeps getting bigger. The Rock has just announced on his Twitter yesterday that he is going to be there live in person in L.A. What are your thoughts? Just specifically, we'll get to a lot of the other stuff that is going on with that show. What are your thoughts on The Rock being there? What are his potential roles?
You know, with The Rock being my favorite wrestler of all time, that was immediately what I was hoping for when they had this big debut on Fox, that they would manage to bring in The Rock in some capacity or form. Honestly, at this point, I don't care what way they bring him back, but I would really hope to see him in the ring one more time. I think that would be a huge welcome surprise. I don't think anybody's really expecting that, but it would definitely be something that would make me as a longtime fan just absolutely pop and lose my mind. So I think that would definitely be a great route to go. But even just having him come on and maybe be like a master of ceremonies, I mean, really, the name SmackDown comes from his character. I mean, I don't think there's any arguing that brand was kind of made with the kind of Rock Mania in mind at the time. So I definitely think that it's a perfect fit. And I did see something on Twitter that suggested that Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to be there as well. I would absolutely love to see them face off once more. I know that recently Austin had said on his podcast that he physically does have one more match in him. And as much as I tried not to approach that territory of the one more matches, because it usually doesn't end well, I think that would be the one more match that everybody would want to see and everybody would think would be welcome.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying not to go there too, because it's like, you know, getting hyped up for Christmas. I mean, you're trying not to get hyped up for it, trying not to get hyped up for it or whatever. You know, I don't again, I'm going to go with my brain. My brain says that will not happen with Austin as far as having that one more match. As far as The Rock's role, I think it's probably going to be what we think. And he will hit somebody with a people's elbow and a rock bottom, say his lines, and ride off into the sunset and go back to his trailer in Hollywood. Whatever. That's fine. I love The Rock, too. Rock was my number two. Austin was always my number one. And having The Rock there, you could do a couple of things. You could have, if you remember, the very first edition of SmackDown, the main event of that SmackDown was The Rock versus Triple H for the WWF Championship with Shawn Michaels as the referee, who ended up screwing him, hitting him with Sweet Chin Music, and then costing him the match. So maybe they do some kind of throwback to that of having these three in the ring. Maybe you have Triple H and Shawn out there, and then The Rock's music hits and we get a reminder of The Rock reminds them of what they did to him 20 years ago. I mean, there is a way maybe to do that. I don't know if that's how they'll go, but it's a way they could reintroduce The Rock and show the footage, and The Rock could say, hey, you know, you two jabronis remember this, and he could point to the TitanTron and pull that up. I mean, I remember that very vividly. I was so pissed at Michaels at the time. But so they could do that. They could just do the backstage shtick. I think the fans would be pretty annoyed that if he doesn't come on in ring. And I would be too. If you're going to have The Rock there, my God, make the most of it. He's there less than Brock Lesnar is. He's there less than Austin is. He's so far removed from wrestling now that anytime he's there, you need to maximize the time that Dwayne Johnson is in that ring. So he's going to probably hit a rock bottom of people's elbow on somebody. Do I think anything's going to result in a final match for The Rock? No, I don't. And for two reasons. Number one, I don't think that The Rock, and he's made it very public recently, not just in years past, but recently, this past year, said he is completely done with wrestling from a in-match and in-ring perspective. And I do believe him. But number two, I don't know who he would even have a if, of course, have had that one more match with. Do I think it would be Austin? No, I don't, because they left their program at the peak that it could possibly be, and I don't think it would reach the quality that we all remember that program being at. It would just be a letdown for fans, a letdown for Austin, a letdown for Rock. I don't think you want to go there. As awesome as that feud was, I don't think you want to go there with a fourth match between these two. You just don't. And could the only again, this is reaching way out there, and I know people are probably thinking the same thing. There has never been that rematch with Rock and Brock, and I have been advocating for that since the Brock beat him at SummerSlam 2002. I have been advocating for that forever, and I think that could be a match that, if The Rock ever returned, could be a perfect match. And those two are going to be on the same show at the same time. So, I don't know. A lot there. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think that would be a great matchup. Like you said, you know, Rock versus Austin, as great as it sounds, probably wouldn't deliver on the actual results. It's definitely something great to think about, and I wouldn't say no to it if it was put in front of me, but at the same time, I know that I would probably get a kind of Goldberg versus Undertaker in Saudi Arabia kind of feel out of it. So you never want to have that kind of feeling. And I think Austin really left his career in the best case by not doing that. And I think that if The Rock does come back in a big way, I think it would be really great to use him maybe in some sort of capacity, because like you said, you know, with him having main evented the first SmackDown, I remember that very well. It was such a huge event. You know, when that first debuted, I think it was on UPN, if I remember correctly, at the time. And that was just such a great experience, and having him be such a big focal point in that, it would be great to see him do something maybe with Triple H and Shawn Michaels to renew that again. But I think that it'd be nice to maybe try and get him to at least stick around for most of the night if they can't get him to stick around for a couple of appearances, because I think that having that big name would really help with the ratings at the beginning, being on Fox. And if they can just get him in some sort of role where he's maybe helping out on commentary or making some decisions, maybe they put him in charge of SmackDown, something like that, I think that would be a really good use of resources. But I'm sure there's not enough money in the world to keep The Rock around for more than one night at this point.
No, there's not. And maybe that's exactly how they start the show off. I mean, look, when they have Austin and they do the Raw 25th anniversary, which I was actually in the Barclays Center for, and I lost my mind. Or they did the Raw reunion just a month or so ago. Like, they had Austin open the show. And so if you have that, you're going to want to make the biggest impact, biggest impression you possibly can with the biggest star you have on the biggest debut WWE's ever had on any TV network ever. And what better way to start it than with The Rock, the guy that started it all with the name of the show, the Dwayne Johnson coming out there. People are going to go crazy. Fox is going to wet their pants. Everybody's going to love the fact that The Rock is back there, and it's going to grab eyeballs immediately. You can't start it off with a match. I am not advocating for every show to start off with a 20-minute promo. I think you feel the same way. It's just, it's not always the best formula because it's very predictable. So for them to jump right into a wrestling match here, probably is this time they probably shouldn't. They need The Rock, I think, right off the bat. Have him come out, and then maybe Triple H, Shawn Michaels follow, or whatever they have planned for that segment with The Rock. That should happen right at the beginning of the show to start it off hot, start it off right, and get people losing their minds.
Yeah, and you know, I definitely agree with that because I think that they've seen great results with that with Austin the times that you've mentioned on Raw. And it just came to my mind while I was thinking of that you know, we usually expect them to be done after that, after the first thing. So what a great way to do a callback to that first episode of SmackDown and have The Rock come out and be the special guest referee and screw over Brock for the title and set up that match. That would definitely be some fantasy booking that I would absolutely love to watch, and I could see it being some mastermind kind of plan that WWE could put together.
Oh, see, yeah, this is dangerous territory now because now I'm starting to think of all the possibilities. And ultimately, when we start doing these fantasy booking, it's always WWE doing what you probably expect them to do. And as you said, with a big name like this and a guy that probably isn't going to have another match, right, it's probably first segment and done. And maybe a little bit of backstage stuff and some funny lines that The Rock does and some throwback nostalgia. And I'm cool with that too. But the big segment, the chunk of what he's there for, is going to be at the very beginning of the show where it's 10, 15 minutes. And it'll probably be done after that. But absolutely, like if I was fantasy booking, yes, that's exactly how I would set up Rock Brock. There's not going to be any more eyeballs on your product than on Friday on Fox. There's just not. It's just the nature of the television business. I don't care how big of a show you have, American Horror Story, Breaking Bad, you name the biggest shows in history, and the premiere episode, the debut episode, is always, 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 always gotten the highest ratings. Maybe the finale could contend, but there's always a drop off in eyeballs after the first. So this is WWE's one and only shot to make that show the biggest it possibly can be. And maybe they can write enough zeros on a check to get The Rock to agree. I have my doubts.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's tough at this point to get him for anything more than a 10-minute segment on SmackDown, let alone a full-on wrestling storyline program with Brock. But, you know, like you said, you know, getting into that dangerous territory of fantasy booking, because a lot of times it does come back to logic, and that's just the logistics of it, that it's really hard to sign The Rock to a long-term deal like that, anything beyond just the one-off appearances. But I definitely think that SmackDown is going to be getting so many eyeballs on it for the premiere. And, you know, I don't expect a finale anytime soon unless things go really horribly. So I think, like you said, it is a time where they're going to have to really contend for the viewership to stay beyond this point, as much of it as they can keep. So I think that trying their hardest, especially with competition being established with AEW this week as well, I think it's really a point that they need to make and make some big splashes and kind of blow our minds a little bit with the surprises that they have in store.
I think there are going to be some surprises. I do. I mean, yes, I heard the Austin rumor. And whether he shows up or not, like I'm a huge Austin fan. I just don't know what his role would be. I mean, when you think of SmackDown, The Rock still comes to mind. I mean, that's just the phrase he coined. There'll probably be some surprise debuts. Maybe even Undertaker has a quick entrance or whatever it may be. I think it's an all hands on deck situation. And you know what? If I was in control of WWE, it absolutely would be. I totally agree with whatever and however many zeros they have to write on checks to get legends to come back just for that night. And I'm on board for that. And in addition to that, not just focus on the legends, because the legends are viewed in the eyes of fans as well. It's a fun, cool nostalgia act. I remember, you know, cheering for so and so when I was a kid, and it's still cool to see them on my screen at 30 years old or whatever, how old you are. But at the same time, it needs to be focused on the talent that's there and is going to be there next week. It's not necessarily just about the legends that are there on Friday. They're more of kind of a one-off to get eyeballs on the product and all that kind of stuff and make Fox happy and spike the ratings. But it's who's going to be there the next week, right? And yes, we have the draft coming up the following week. So, you know, that is going to be where the real chips fall. And so, in other words, I want the storylines to also be progressed as we continue here. Now, there may not be a whole lot because there's going to be the reset button hit the next week, but the focus shouldn't just be on the legends. It needs to be a lot on the existing stars that are going to be there on the weeks and months to come.
Yeah, and I think that's a big point that was lost on some of the previous kind of experiments that they did. I think Raw Reunion was a bit of a tester pilot kind of idea of what they wanted to present with this premiere on Fox with SmackDown. So I think that they need to learn some lessons from that sort of experience where, you know, we didn't need to see DX beating up the OC and Seth Rollins looking on like he was a proud child, you know, watching his dad beat somebody up at a softball game. It's just, you know, it wasn't something that we needed, and it didn't progress any of the future stars. And that's really the whole point. You know, if you look back throughout history, it's always been passing of the torch moments that are career defining for a large majority of wrestlers, those matches that send people off, the retirement matches, all those sort of things. When you use them right, they can really be launching pads for making big stars. You know, you look at Steve Austin, it was Jake the Snake Roberts who he whooped at King of the Ring to start the 316 movement. And it's just those kind of moments where you use people who may be downtrending in their career, or in the case of people like they've been bringing in more recently, are well beyond their career, or at least should be in some of the cases. I think that you really need to establish stars by using them properly and not just shoving them into weird programs where you have Seth Rollins getting to say suck it, and it's just those kind of things that don't really progress anybody and nobody really gets further. It, like you said, it hits the scratches the nostalgia itch and makes you go, oh, I'm glad to see them again. But other than that, it doesn't really have any staying power beyond just that one moment.
Right, and that's the danger that WWE poses every time they go to the well for these legends. And how many more times can WWE go to the well to pull these legends out? Not too many, and not too many, if any, are capable of having that one more match, right? And even Hogan, which I can't believe I forgot that segment on Raw, which we'll talk about in just a second, but. Even Hogan got booed, or he got the one more match, and not got booed. He got booed last week on Raw, but this week he got the one more match chance. I'm sitting there going, what in the hell are you guys talking about one more match? Do you really want to see Hulk Hogan in one more match? You know, and actually, well, since I'm already talking about it, what in the hell is Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan doing in a team versus team match? Number one, I never want to see these two in an actual match again because, look, Father Time has said it's over. I don't know what the crowd in Phoenix or wherever they were this week were saying and when they were thinking it. Hey, let's say one more match. Come, do you really want to see that? Do you really want to see Hogan versus Flair in one more match? I don't. I don't need to see them either A, kill themselves, literally, I mean, or do you want to see them hurt themselves or embarrass the company? Neither. And none of those. None of the above is the answer. But my quick thoughts on that is it looks like the Saudi Arabian government and the prince has paid WWE enough to, basically implement his fantasy matches in a pay-per-view crown jewel that has a massive dark cloud hanging over it from last year. And ultimately, the matches at Saudi Arabia mean nothing. They are a glorified house show with a prince that uses WWE and his money to create fantasy matches as if he's a 12-year-old playing a video game.
Yeah, it's really kind of a despicable part of the WWE business model, really, to have these Saudi Arabia shows. And it's just, there was a moment where they mentioned Crown Jewel, and the crowd just had an audible disapproval, and it kind of put an air over things because you could tell they thought that something was going to materialize that night. And thank God it wasn't Flair versus Hogan, you know, going up against each other a combined 136 years on this earth. You know, nobody needs to see that. It's not a clash of the elderly on Raw. So that was a terrible idea to even kind of throw that out and give the crowd hope that that could even be a possibility. But another interesting point to this whole weird team dynamic is I saw that Impact Wrestling actually posted on their Twitter account that they have already done this. They did Team Flair versus Team Hogan at Lethal Lockdown, I think back when they were still TNA at the time. So it's kind of funny that we've hit this weird circle of life with these Saudi Arabia shows, that they're getting so crazy that they're taking the crazy ideas TNA had that didn't work, that were so crazy they nearly bankrupt them, and because they have so much money to do it, they're doing it over in Saudi Arabia. So it's almost like they're doing the TNA experiment in Saudi Arabia using their ideas.
It's sad. I mean, I don't think WWE can get out from underneath this contract with Saudi Arabia fast enough. And from everything that I've heard and seen, again, I haven't seen the contract itself, but from everything I've heard consistently is that this was a 10-show deal. And what that means is, if my math is correct, that we've had, what, 3 shows in Saudi Arabia? So this would be number 4. So we have 7 shows to go. And so if people don't like Saudi Arabia, well, you better, you know, strap yourself in, because we've got 7 more shows of Saudi Arabia, like it or not. And people can call it blood money from last year and all that kind of stuff. It was a awful set of circumstances for WWE to be in, but they're a company and they have to contractually hold up their end of the bargain. You know, no matter what side of the aisle you fall on in that whole controversy, and I'm going to protest the show by not watching it. Ultimately, WWE had nothing to do with that. They have a contract that they cannot and should not. Honestly, they shouldn't be the ones to breach that contract. And, you know, again, this is a very controversial topic. But focusing on the product, the wrestling here, I think, yeah, that this is just a match that you just go, where the hell did this come from? You just go, what is this? I mean, again, what's on the line? Nothing. Okay, well, why am I on Team Hogan? Why am I on Team Flair? I don't know. I mean, like, what are the stipulations? What's at stake? Nothing. That's ultimately it. Nothing. Other than it's a gimmick match that you have 2 of the biggest names in the history of wrestling, no questions about that, who are the coaches, and very well placed. They shouldn't be nothing more than just cheerleaders on the sidelines. Who are there, who are really the stars of the show, and then what do they do? I mean, I don't know the purpose of this match. Tell me.
Yeah, it really does, just like you said, feel like the Prince playing a video game with the real life talent. And I saw something today, I think it was on Facebook, where Hulk Hogan was teasing the Hogan versus Team Flair gimmick for Saudi Arabia already. And he was saying that he has 1 more leg drop left in him. And I'm just like, why here? Why there is that the place that we're bringing these matches together? You know, if anything, shouldn't these one-off crazy matches feel special and not be in Saudi Arabia where all this controversy is? You know, like you said, I don't know the specifics of the contract. If they do have 7 shows remaining, then maybe they can try and get out, you know, as many as possible, as quickly as possible, and do some sort of maybe 2-night events, or even try and get away with maybe doing a tour where they get as many of those shows knocked out as once as they will allow them to do at once. I just think that it's just having these legends come back for this just feels even more wrong, because it's like we're being wronged of those moments being special just so they can go to Saudi Arabia and put on a quick nobody cares about it after that show kind of performance. And it's just so sad to see that be the way that these legendary talents are being used as a cast off.
And again, yeah, I mean, the thing is, you kind of said it, the talent and the legends are all being tainted by it being in Saudi Arabia, a place that we are, as American fans, Canadian fans, everybody else in the world, fans of WWE, have been educated to go, oh, Saudi Arabia, that place, the place that doesn't allow women to compete in a public forum, that doesn't allow women to drive. Oh, wait, no, they just allowed them to drive in 2019. I mean, like, this is a place that has suppressed women for centuries and are only now basically producing laws that equate them to human beings. It's just a terrible place for women to be. And I know WWE wants to be that perfect, or to be that company that is the first ever to allow women to compete in a public forum. I'm sure that they are on the phone with the Saudi Arabian government and officials that may be there to say, to try to convince them to be the first ones to allow a women's match, the very first ever. They love first evers. First evers is like that should be the slogan on the side of the building in Stamford, Connecticut. They love that. They love the history-making stuff. And imagine the press that WWE would get for them to allow, for to be the first ones that Saudi Arabian government allows women to compete in. And so I think that's what they're after ultimately. And not, again, that's not the ultimate goal, but that is certainly one that I am sure that they are chipping away at every single time that there's a show there.
Yeah, I mean, you saw those rumors come through the last time that they were there, and it definitely feels like that's part of the goal here. It's definitely, I think, a shot in the foot that they didn't anticipate, where they thought that they were going to be able to paint this Saudi Arabia deal as, you know, bringing a beacon of hope to this area that has long been deprived of, you know, a lot of the Western standards that we know. So I think that, you know, looking at that, I think that ultimately they just wanted to present Saudi Arabia as a good PR move. And so the way to recover that is by going through and trying to get the first women's match there. And will it work? I really don't think it will. I think it's just so far broken, the whole relationship with Saudi Arabia, and they're so blind to the fact that people don't like it and that they don't agree with it. And, you know, I'm sure they're aware of it, but it's almost like they're not willing to fully commit to accepting that. And so they're kind of brushing it off by still trying to make it a grand PR move and look like this company that's willing to do all these progressive things and do as many firsts as possible, like you said, but it's just not coming across that way. And it just hits the eye, it hits the ear, it hits everything all the wrong way. And it just does not come across as something that feels like it's a motivational story that you'll read in the paper on a Sunday.
No, but it doesn't. But I'm again, I just, and the thing that really rubbed me the wrong way too was when they did, I think it wasn't this past time, it was the event before Crown Jewel, where they had this promotional video that was run. It was basically a propaganda video for the Saudi Arabian government and how, you know, look what they're doing for the women and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, we can get our licenses now. I don't know, a whole bunch. It was basically a propaganda video that was produced by WWE, I'm sure, as part of the agreement with the Saudi Arabian government to portray the fact that, well, or the perception, I should say, a much more important word, the perception that the Saudi Arabian government is more has really progressed in their laws and their standards and their culture of, look what we're doing, let's use the WWE platform to spread our propaganda to what the Western world thinks we are. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. Again, this whole idea that Saudi Arabia is progressing in all these areas is based on the fact that WWE ran one promotional video of them a couple of pay-per-views ago in Saudi Arabia. So there's not a whole lot of evidence beyond that to support it, other than, hey, last time at Crown Jewel, the American journalist got chopped up into a bunch of pieces and the prince had something to do with it. It just was a terrible, terrible PR day for WWE. But they're back, and they're back with Saudi Arabia, and I don't think they're going anywhere. But one last thing I wanted to touch on with SmackDown with you is Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon is now a ladder match at SmackDown and not at Hell in a Cell. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I think that this is finally going to be the end of this feud. Finally, they're going to bring it together in a satisfactory manner. You know, I really wish they would have done this back at SummerSlam with an I Quit match and kind of send it off that way. But I think that this will be the kind of death of the current iteration of Shane McMahon. I think that there will definitely be a spot where he's high up on a high ladder and he falls down, because we all know that's what Shane does best. He does the high bumps really well, and I think that'll lead to Kevin Owens grabbing the briefcase and basically getting Shane fired. And I think ultimately that'll be the best thing for the rebranded Friday Night SmackDown, and being on Fox and having this kind of real sports atmosphere with the draft and it no longer being called the Superstar Shakeup. It seems very clear that they're trying to put a lot of attention and also alter the product's feel for Fox, and so I think that'll definitely be a good way of doing that.
Yeah, there is just no way in any scenario, in any universe, in any world, that Kevin Owens can lose this match. I just don't see it. Because if he go down that road, that if Kevin Owens loses, just let's take a ride down that terrible road, There is no good outcome. There's nothing good that can come of that. Because then what you have is a feud that they said has ended that just continues, because Kevin Owens can't just be gone from WWE, right? And you can't have Shane McMahon continuing to rule. One of the biggest complaints of SmackDown Live is what Kevin Owens verbalized a couple of months ago when his, quote, face turn began, is the fact that Shane McMahon is taking up all this TV time and the superstars that deserve it are not getting it because Shane McMahon is the one who's hogging it and shouldn't be. And so to me, this is the only outcome that WWE, I don't care if it's predictable. I think fans are ready for this to be over, and it's the right move for Shane McMahon to lose and for Kevin Owens to prevail and go into a meaningful program with an actual wrestler. I don't need Shane McMahon to be out there pretending that we are supposed to all believe he can go toe-to-toe with AJ Styles, go toe-to-toe with The Undertaker, go toe-to-toe with Kevin Owens, and so on. I could go down the list of guys that he has no business being in there with and has no business, and the WWE creative has no business making us feel like we're stupid enough to believe that Shane McMahon can go toe-to-toe with any of these actual world-class athletes in WWE. So I'm ready for this to be over. Kevin Owens needs to just deliver a stunner, maybe a couple stunners, go up, get the briefcase, call it a night, and we move on from this forever.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because I think the moments that stick out in my mind the best of Shane McMahon in a wrestling ring, at least the top moment that comes to mind right off the bat is SummerSlam 2000, the hardcore title match he had against Steve Blackman, where he was kind of running scared for a large majority of it because he was terrified of the fact that he had to actually compete against a strong wrestler like Steve Blackman. And the kendo stick fall off, it all felt like it was like somebody who shouldn't have been there who got put in harm's way, and it made a lot of sense. And now that they've made Shane McMahon go toe-to-toe with people like Kevin Owens and The Undertaker and Roman Reigns, it just doesn't feel the same, and I think it's kind of broken his character, and not in the Matt Hardy kind of way. It's just so convoluted, and it doesn't work to have him basically play the role of GM and also be a legitimate wrestling threat for no real reason. So I think that it should definitely end up that way, but I do also have a counterpoint as well, where I think there is one outcome where it would be okay if Kevin Owens took the loss, and that's if they did the old loophole from the firing situation and found something like bringing him over to NXT, you know, as a supplemental role to bring some big name value into that, and say basically he was hired to NXT, you know, a little bit of a weird loophole, you know, knowing that NXT is, of course, a WWE brand, but it's something they could approach and it would at least feel okay. It's nowhere near what I want to happen, but that's the only way that I could justify it if it were to happen. And please don't let it happen.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're all just collectively praying that this does not happen. Yeah, that could be the one out. But I don't know what purpose it would serve for Kevin Owens, who, I mean, let's face it, NXT is a great brand. They are a legitimate third brand and could compete at some point in the next few years for ratings of Raw or SmackDown. I really believe they came from nothing and have made themselves into a great third brand. But the thing is, they are still the third brand. So for Kevin Owens to take that demotion, although it would make NXT feel that much more legitimate by having an established star that's been Universal Champion, that has really made a name for himself, to go back to NXT, you couldn't take it anything other than a demotion for Kevin Owens. And so I just don't see any way around this outcome. This has to be the biggest slam dunk of the night, of Kevin Owens winning and just putting an end to the Shane McMahon nonsense. But to that point, too, I really don't think WWE is going to stick with their stipulation of having Kevin Owens or Shane McMahon gone from WWE. I mean, how many times have we seen stipulations not be upheld in WWE's storylines throughout the years? I mean, I could go chapter and verse of how many times that they have not upheld their stipulations. So even though Shane McMahon is gone, is he really gone? Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, there'll definitely be a return at some point. I mean, anytime you look at how many times Vince McMahon has put his own face on television, and you can definitely expect a lot more of that with his son going forward. I'm sure even when he does finally reach the grave, I'm sure you'll still see Shane McMahon's face on television, maybe even more at that point. But basically, it's something that'll definitely come back, and he'll have a role again at some point. But I think, like you said, with the way that he's come across now, and he's kind of been broken by the idea of wrestling all these legitimate competitors and trying to mirror him as both a strong man alongside being a general manager, weasel kind of character, it just hasn't worked. And I think some time off will really make him coming back feel like a special deal, and maybe have him go into a stipulation match when he comes back and do another high spot if he's up to it by whenever they bring him back. And just do it so that it's refreshing when he comes back, as to feeling like it's just the same old thing when we see him every week.
Yep, it's just time for a change. As Owen Hart once said, enough is enough, it's time for a change. That's all that this is. So I'm ready. So, Zach, is there anything that we didn't touch on before we wrap things up here?
No, I don't think that there's anything much that we didn't cover. A little bit of everything all across the board tonight, right?
That's just the way that these conversations go, but I think that's the best way to do it. So, yeah, but before we go, obviously, let everyone know again when they can hear you and where they can find you on social media.
Absolutely. So starting tomorrow night, AEW Dynamite will mark the beginning of the AEW podcast. So I'll be recording it on Wednesday nights, kind of the immediate reaction after that. And if you want to follow me along the way, kind of as I tweet about everything that I'm seeing as well, you can follow me at Spots High. I'm always very active when I'm watching the show, of trying to pay attention and live react my thoughts. So the AEW podcast will definitely be a similar extent to that, where I'm definitely going to have those kind of instant knee-jerk reactions to everything that I see, and let you know how things are as I perceive them, and let you know exactly how I feel each and every Wednesday.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I know it's going to be a great addition to this WWE podcast umbrella, if you will. And I know that having AEW as part of this show, even though this is the WWE podcast, it seems kind of like a little bit like, well, wait, it's WWE. How's it AEW? Well, it's all pro wrestling. We all love pro wrestling. If you can't just say, hell with WWE. WWE is the biggest player in the game. AEW is the newest player in the game. I think it just makes sense. So I think it's going to be an awesome addition. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say, because I'm sure that you're going to get me trying to find time to watch AEW, because I would love to find time again. It's just a time deal. So I'm looking forward to it. I know that you'll do a great job, and you can catch that every single Thursday here on the WWE podcast. So I'm looking forward to that, and I know that it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun, because just talking about what you love, there's nothing better than that.
Absolutely. And I've really fallen back in love with wrestling in such a force, because now that social media is such a big part of wrestling as a whole, you really get to see how the wrestling fans embrace it. And that's what ended up bringing me in to write my first article and now start my very first podcast. So I'm excited to really let my inner wrestling nerd unleash all over the internet.
Yeah, that's exactly what we are. But look, like, the thing is, when you find a fellow wrestling fan, it's a conversation you could have for forever. The conversations don't stop. And and when people who aren't fans, they just don't get it. It's hard to explain to people why wrestling's so damn awesome. But when you have a fan that is as passionate as you don't have to explain why it's awesome. You just know why it's awesome, and you could just talk for hours. So, Zach, it's been awesome having you on the show. I'm looking forward to hearing your official debut episode of the Dynamite review for AEW. That's tomorrow night, and Thursday everyone will be able to hear your show. So I'm looking forward to it. Everybody, definitely follow him on social media as well, and it's been a pleasure. We'll definitely have to bring you back on.
Absolutely. Yep. There's never enough wrestling to be watched. So as much as my time will hate me for it, I'm going to try and squeeze in as much as possible. And I'm sure I'll be watching WWE each week right along AEW. So we'll definitely have a lot more long conversations ahead of us talking about that for sure.
Absolutely. And maybe I can make a appearance on the NXT podcast at some point if I, you know, educate myself enough to intelligently talk about AEW. So I'm sure we'll have a ton of interaction down the line. And it's been fun tonight. And I'm looking forward to your debut show. Again, everybody, Thursday night will be the very first inaugural show of the NXT podcast. So, Zach, thanks so much for coming on tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me, and I'm looking forward to starting this crazy wrestling journey.
Strap in. Strap in. That's all I got to say. So, Zach, thanks so much, and we'll be in touch.
Absolutely. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Bye.